You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 602, the episode with the singer of one of my all-time favorite bands. On the episode tonight, it's Christoph Jesus, or just Chris Urban of Crazy in the Brains. Let's open with their brand new song, Open Eyes, and we'll be right back.
Friend of me, until you started stealing like we didn't raise you better. I used to love you, love to tell you, we grew up together. But that was then, and it ain't like that now. It ain't safe for you to come back around.
Above your head, I'm on my own. You had your chance, and now it's gone. I had to find another way. When you gave up, I took your place. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, 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 oh,
oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, up in hell. I'm laughing now, what I once thought was brief. Grasping for cloud, but you're still out of reach. It's hard to see this odyssey unfolding like it does. Bet I'll turn my back on it if I got to do it, bud. I love you once, but it ain't like that now. It ain't safe for you to come back.
We are back. First of all, our guest is here. Before we talk to our guests, Hallie Bullet, what's happening? What's happening in the world of HB? And will there be a Hallie Bullet sabbatical for the next 4 to 5 weeks?
Yeah, there will be. I think so, because I'm going to be in Europe. Things are good. Things are really good.
Hello, so for your last episode for the next 4 or 5 weeks, are you really going to try to squeeze it on in and really, you know, live for what it's worth? Or are you just going to savor it and not, you know, not be that proactive?
I'm really gonna swing my like very strong obnoxious opinions around, knowing that like then you guys will get to take a little break from me, and if you're like irritated by any of my strong opinions, then you know you'll be able to like get rid of those feelings while I'm gone. But I'm not gonna do that.
Like your last sentence of this week should be something like really cryptic, and then you'll be like, I'll see you later. You know? But we're also here with M. Moore in Hallie Bullet's absence. I think we should play at least one episode of Punk's Points. And what else should we do in Hallie Bullet's absence?
Just go absolutely nuts.
Fair enough.
Nothing's scheduled. Nothing's like streamlined. Everything's just going.
I always love the random chaos. But speaking of random chaos, we are here with a rider of random chaos. Or is there an expert machination behind it all? We are here with Chris of Crazy in the Brain. Chris, do you go by Christoph or Chris? Like, what's the nom de plume these days?
Whatever is more comfortable for you is fine with me. Chris, Christoph Jesus. You could just call me Jesus if you want to.
I'm going to tell a little bit of a story here. We'll reflect a little bit. We'll get to the interview. I love Crazy in the Brain. If you ask me, one of the top 25 punk bands of all time, and one of the top 25 bands of all time. And I mean that. I think Crazy in the Brains is an absolutely an amazing band. They take kind of the wild, weird stuff of the first wave of punk. Chris and the rest of the band members definitely add their own unique perspective. Chris's lyrics are super unique. Sometimes they're abstract and sometimes they're literal. And it really is just one of the greatest band I've ever. And live, I've seen them maybe 12 to 15 times now, and I've never not seen them totally rock the house. And the way that I learned about Crazy in the Brains is there used to be a cassette label called Baldy Longhair, run by a cool guy called Todd. And he just sent me one of their cassettes out of the blue. He says, hey, you might like this. And so I played it, and I listened to it sitting in my car before Jello Biafra show at the Parkside in San Francisco. And I wrote my review before the Jello Biafra show, and I gave them a 6 out of 10. And in those days, we were a little bit harder on scores, which I think we still should be. But I thought to myself, but I got to give them room to grow. I can't, start off with the 8 out of 10 because then they'll have nowhere to go. And so with every subsequent release, they just got better and better and better. And the first time that I saw them was they played a show that wasn't even announced. I think Todd might have said to me, oh, they're playing Kung Fu Necktie on like a Sunday afternoon at like a 4 p.m. It was Crazy in the Brains, some drone metal band, and one other band. And Chris, do you remember how many people were in the audience of that show?
No, but judging by the description, it's probably not that many.
It was one. I was the audience of that entire show.
Wait, what? I think the band we played with, weren't they like kind of like a wrestling themed, and there was like a garbage
can? That's right.
Yeah, you know what? I think that guy actually passed away recently.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. I remember like some guy, like he put like a trash can on his head and some guy hit him with a chair or something like that.
Somebody in our band, I think he was like telling someone in our band, like, hit me with this trash can, and that happened.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think it was Brett. I think Brett like didn't want to, but he kept yelling at Brett to hit him with a trash can. And he did, and then the guy like fell over or something. And it was a weird scene, honestly.
I don't even know how we got linked up with that show or that band. That was crazy. Yeah.
And I actually did my first interview with Crazy in the Brains there, and we talked about the song Lindsay Lohan and Saturday Night Live and all the old school Crazy in the Brains tracks.
That was when we first started. I think I don't even think we had a full album out. We just had a tape with a few songs on it. Yeah.
And the second time I saw Crazy in the Brains was they had a clubhouse in Jersey City, but it actually was like a biker gang or something, or I don't know if it was a gang, but and also, Chris, do you remember who else I met at that show?
Was it David Liebehart?
No, it was Hallie Bullitt with the Unlovables.
It was me. Okay. I think I was playing with Hiccup.
Yeah,
that night. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And Hallie Bullitt, do you remember there was a band that like tap danced while they played at that show?
No. But why not? I wish I remembered that. That sounds fantastic.
That is also where we recorded Hallie Bullitt's shout out on the Band from the PC mixtape, which is now immortalized on the Band from the PC mixtape, who Crazy in the Brains and the Unlovables and are also on. But anyways, Chris, enough about reminiscing. Yes. Crazy in the Brains, I saw them play punk rock bowling, and we're going to get more into the punk rock bowling thing in a second. But I saw Crazy in the Brains play punk rock bowling. They played two shows. They did the pool party and the side stage, or not, the side stage is not the right word, the other stage, I guess.
Yeah.
The pool party was insane. It was jam-packed. I don't know if most of the people there knew Crazy in the Brains or not, although actually I was surprised. Like, there was like 40 people like yelling the lyrics the entire time. So it was real cool to be in Vegas and have all these people know Crazy in the Brains track. It was such a fun party at the pool party. Plus, Brad Logan of Leftover Crack jumped up on stage to sing People Who Died with Crazy in the Brains. But the bouncers grabbed him and hurled him off the stage because they didn't know who he was. And it was one of the most amazing sets of the entire punk rock bowling history ever. But anyway, Chris, we've got a brand new song called Open Eyes. And I believe it is important with regards to how you guys are feeling and where you guys are at. Tell me about this brand new track, Open Eyes, that we just played.
So this is going to be the last song by this band that features the xylophone. We have new people in the band now. So I'm the only original person from that first show you saw us. I'm the only original person from that lineup. This song, we recorded this song during COVID with Open Eyes. That was a song we dropped like a few months back. And Yeah, man, I'm stoked on it. It's kind of like the beginning of a new era for us. And yeah, I'm really excited about it. It comes out tomorrow. Well, technically today, I think, because it comes out August 12th. And there'll be a music video and all that. And yeah, I'm really excited for it.
So are you happy that Crazy the Brains has morphed into a new band with a keyboard instead of a xylophone? Are you sad? Are you both? What's your perspective on that?
You know, I like to embrace change as it comes and do my best to not resist it. I mean, it's definitely not something that I kind of planned on, but in the end, it turned out to be the better thing for us. And you know, like we've kind of, as a band and as people, we've been evolving constantly since like every piece of music that we put out has been different than the last, and there's been so many different lineups, and it's kind of just been me the whole time, you know, with different groups of people. So I think it just kind of makes sense to our story, you know. I mean, like the xylophone is something that me and Jeff, the xylophone punk thing was something that me and Jeff kind of came up with together, and you know, like. At first, it kind of felt weird to step away from it because it felt like something that was ours, you know, and it was like there was like an emotional attachment to it. But at the end of the day, it's like it goes back to what I just said before. Like we were always trying to evolve, we're always trying to push forward. So it felt right after we gave it a shot, you know, and also I just like. Happened to meet really cool people at the same time as like two people were leaving, and then like other people just showed up in my life, and one of them being Allie, who is an awesome keyboard player, really good musician, really like interesting and exciting artist. So having her in the mix like really just kind of like elevated everything that I was writing and everything that we were putting forward. So I'm really excited for it, you know. Like I said, I mean, change is coming regardless if you are ready for it or not. So you kind of just got to embrace it. There's not many bands that can do the same album over and over again. You know, you got like the Ramones or like Motorhead, but it's harder to do that, I think, than to change because we're changing every day. You know, you're not the same person you were last week, or at least I feel that way about myself, you know. So. Like I said, I'm stoked. I'm really excited for the future.
So the listeners know right now, Crazy in the Brains is Chris and Ernest on guitar. And Ernest has been in the band like what, 6 or 7 years now?
Probably 5 years, or something like that. I'm terrible with time, to be honest. It could be 5, it could be 25. I don't even know.
On keyboards is Allie from, is it Ska the Presses is her band or Stop the other press. Band?
Stop the Presses. And then she's in another band called Rude Girl Review. On bass, you know, we've been playing with a few different people on bass. I'm like, I keep saying it, but I'm really excited. We're in the studio with this configuration at the end of August with Pete from Bouncing Souls. I'm recording all new music, and it's been fun. It's been awesome, you know.
What are some of the themes in the new music?
You know, I think you brought up that song we did, Lindsay Lohan. Like, I feel like over the years, like, I just, and it wasn't really, like, intentional, but I think over the years, I kind of moved away from, like, more abstract songwriting and just getting more literal and just talking about exactly what's going on in my life. Maybe because, you know, in the beginning, it was a choice. Cause I really was into like Bob Dylan and like the Moldy Peaches and stuff like that. That were like, it was the type of writing that was like really outside of the box. And like I said, abstract, but it was also maybe like feeling a little self-conscious in the early days of like really like just getting deep and exposing your emotions, like just flat out. So the more time went on, I got more comfortable with that. And the songs that we're making now, or the songs that I'm writing now, are just kind of just like straightforward. Like this is what I'm going through. These are my feelings. And almost like, not to sound corny or too dramatic, but it's almost like a therapy session, like on record. And that's what most of the new songs that we're recording are like. That's kind of the vibe. And that kind of, that, like I said, like the last album was kind of that too, but this, like, you know, I don't deliver pizza anymore is very literal. Like, I used to deliver pizza and now I don't. But yeah,
but there's more to that song. The song isn't just that you don't deliver pizza, and correct me if I'm wrong, the song is that you don't deliver pizza because that's a constraint that's getting in the way of what you really want to do, and you really want to live your life for how you want to live it. That's the song, isn't it, really? Or isn't it? Is it really just about not delivering pizza?
Well, and it's exactly what you said, yeah. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Goodfellas, but I think I've seen Goodfellas,
Chris. I think that's a movie I might have seen once or twice.
You know, Jeff, there's the ex xylophone player. He actually didn't like that movie. So like,
why?
And he never would watch the full movie. He's like,
he's not even Italian. You think he'd love it? Like, if you were Italian, I could see not liking it, but
he's not Italian at all. No, but okay. So that movie, you know, the scene where Joe Pesci's character is getting like kind of. He's getting messed with by, what's his name, like?
Billy Bats.
Okay. And he's messing with him because he used to shine shoes. And he's like, I don't know if you heard anymore, but I don't shine shoes anymore. That's where I kind of got the idea for the song title, I Don't Deliver Pizza Anymore. Because, yeah, it's kind of making a choice, right? And being like, I don't want to be boxed into this 9-to-5, no future lifestyle, right? I want to pursue my dreams or whatever. And that's what that song is basically about. And both verses are as literal as you could possibly get. All the shit I'm talking about in that story like happened to me. And yeah, I'm just more into songs like that right now. I'm more into listening to music like that too, you know? I mean, I still love like whimsical whacked out music, you know, like lyrics too, but right now I'm just kind of more in the mindset of like, this is my diary, this is my therapy session. Like,
what are you listening to right now?
What am I listening to right now? Oh, you know what I just like rediscovered was Mac Miller's album Circles, which was his last album before he died. It got put out after he died. And he's an artist who, like, you know, was very open about his struggles with depression and substance abuse and stuff and that stuff that I can really relate to and again, you know, something that is inspiring the songs that I'm doing right now.
Chris, I'm gonna extend this question after I actually ask the question to give you time to answer.
Yeah.
And if you want to brush off the question, feel free. So when Crazy in the Brains played Punk Rock Bowling, from the outside looking in, it was crazy good. Crazy in the Brains just ruled the pool party. And the next day at the show, they blew the audience away. But what the audience didn't know is they're looking up on the stage and Crazy in the Brains is rocking out. They're having fun. They're stealing the show. And there was a lot of changes going. Well, there's two big events happened behind the scene. One big event for you and one big event for Ernest. And so people didn't realize the emotional significance of that during the show. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted, do you want to talk about that and how that's really affected you? Or do you just want to brush it off because it's too personal? And if you want to brush it off, it's fine. And I'll give Chris time to think about that while I keep talking. One of the cool things about seeing Crazy the Brains live is it is wild and crazy on stage. And they just totally rock the house. And they're weird and they're unique. And I have never not seen them totally rock the audience. And there's something that the band does. I've been to a lot of shows and lots of people just kind of stand there or they mosh, but even moshing isn't really interaction with the band. It's really just, I feel like dancing around, but Crazy in the Brains have some sort of energetic connection. I think it's cause they're unique. And we're going to talk about the uniqueness in a minute, but anyway, back to the question, Chris, what did you think of my real question that I just officiated after an extended question?
We can totally talk about that, you know? Absolutely.
Do you want me to give the details or you want to give the details about you and Ernest's big life change?
Yeah, it was, I mean, that tour, so that was the first show of a 6-week tour after, you know, no one playing shows for what, like a year and a half. So that in itself was kind of crazy, you know, driving out from Jersey to Vegas, first show with Zach on drums too. So there's that. And then, yeah, I would say two days before that show, we buried my dad. He passed away a few days before that tour happened. So that was a huge moment. That was a huge moment for me, obviously. You know, in the days leading up to the tour and the show, you know, no one really knew what I was gonna do or what the band was gonna do. Like, oh, is this tour canceled or what the fuck is going on? You know, I couldn't even think about it, right? Because I was doing the things you do when someone passes away. Like, I was with my family, we were figuring out all the services, and like, you know, my dad was somebody who was a huge part of my life, and he was a huge supporter of the band. I mean, honestly, you probably met him. I don't know if you probably did, or maybe you don't remember or what, but he would come to shows. He was actually at the Funhouse, which is, people thought was so crazy, because it's like, yeah, like you said, it's like a pretty shifty like biker gang punk bar, and there's my dad just sitting there like drinking a beer, like watching crazy ass punk bands. Like, he was a huge supporter of the band. So that, among everything else that you can think of, like, yeah, it was a huge moment to like, yo, am I going on this tour? And honestly, there was never a question in my mind. I mean, when the day came, the van was, you know, the van was packed, and I'm like, yo, let's go, I'm ready. And we did that tour and we did that show, and it was super emotional. It was, you know, but I needed it though. Like I needed to do it. I it kind of maybe sounds crazy. Like, how could you play a show after, you know, just a day after, but it's like, I think I would have felt a lot worse if I didn't. And I just kind of like wallowed in my sadness. I had a lot of time in the van for 6 weeks to think about everything. And like, it's like, yo, I'm going to be thinking about this regardless if I'm home or if I'm out here. So let me be out here and do what I love and do what I'm good at. And I know that's what he would want me to do. For Ernest, Ernest was close with my dad too, because he never knew his father. So he was devastated. And the passing of my dad inspired him to look up his family history on the internet. He was just Googling people in his family, and he found out that he had a brother he never knew about.
Oh, wow.
So it's just so, yeah, crazy, right? but which is also crazy and insane coincidence or whatever, the stars were aligning perfectly. It turns out his brother was a fan of punk music and lived in Chicago, where we were about to be in like a week. So his brother came out to see the band, and he met his brother, who he had never known in his life, at our show in Chicago. His brother shows up. I mean, he literally looks exactly like Ernest. Like, he's got the long hair. He looks like kind of like a bizarro version of Ernest. Like, very clearly his brother, you know. He's wearing a video game t-shirt of some game. I'm not into video games, but these guys are. And he's walking up, and whatever the video game is, Ernest is like, oh my God, that's my favorite game. That's the game that I play every night. He's wearing these like bracelets, these like punk rock like spiky bracelets that like Ernest wears. He's got the long hair, whatever. Like, it's so weird. And yeah, these guys kick it, and he ends up coming to two of our shows in Chicago, and they've been tight ever since. But yeah, it was a very transitional, like sacred tour. Honestly, a lot of like really impactful moments were taking place on the tour. And was it hard? I mean, I don't even know if that's the word. It was just a lot, you know. Like, it was definitely super emotional, super heavy. But it was also like, for both of us, for me and Ernest, it was like, not to keep using this word, but it was like super therapeutic and very necessary, I think.
I'm going to, I got a bunch of questions, but I'm going to ask you a few more, but I'm going to ask one more, then I'm going to throw it to Hallie and them, and then maybe I'll hit you with a few more, and then we'll wrap this segment up. But what's it like being up there and you've got all this sadness in your life, you know, that just happened, and everyone in the audience is having fun and dancing around and is oblivious? Is that good, or is that almost like cruel? You know what I mean?
No, it's good. It's good for me. I mean, I don't know, like, everyone's different, but like, I didn't really cry a lot. Like, I cried a few times, but like maybe twice, but like emotionally at the shows, like that was like, I felt like I was like pouring out all my emotions separate from what I'm saying, a side note, I got a chance to like honor my dad during these shows too, because some shows when I felt like I would get on the mic and be like, yo, listen, this just happened in my life. I want to share it with you. I just, my dad passed away, you know, and I would invite the crowd to join us in a chant where we used to call my dad Mark. His name is Mark. We called him Mark the Shark. So we would get the bass drum going and we would just chant Mark the Shark. And like, we would have nights where there'd be like 300, 400 people like chanting my dad's name. And for me, that was like the best way to just navigate through these super deep, heavy feelings. Like, I'm not, like, I don't think it would have ever been good for me to like wallow and like dig into the sadness. The sadness is going to be there, right? Regardless, right? But I think the positive energy of our shows was super helpful for me, you know? And on top of it, you know, which was so amazing, probably more valuable than any dollar amount ever could equate to, is like people after the show coming up to me and like, yo, I lost this person recently, or I lost this person, like tears in their eyes, like, thank you. And I'm like, yo, thank you. Like, that was the best way for me to navigate through all that. I'm actually super grateful that I had a tour lined up, you know, in conjunction with this super like crazy moment in my life. Cause if I was just sitting at home, like, I don't know how it would have dealt with it. It might've been a lot harder. I may have reverted back to past behaviors that I don't want to get back into, you know, like drinking, whatever, like drugs. I don't, that wouldn't have been good for me. You know, this was the best way to kind of navigate through a crazy situation, you know?
Well said. Hallie Bullitt, after I've brought out all the heaviest of topics, what jolly questions do you have for Chris?
Well, I don't know if it'll be jolly or heavy. So Chris, I'm like a long time fan of you guys. I think I saw you the first time. I'm actually hoping you can help me remember the venue you were playing at it was a show with Brooke Pridemore. It was like it felt like it was something that was meant to be like a garage or a tool shed, or it was like, do you know where I'm talking? Where was that show?
I'm a huge fan of all your bands too, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, I don't remember, but I know we did a lot of like, it was in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
We did a lot of like those DIY spots in Brooklyn that were like there 1 week and then gone the next. So like, yeah.
It was the only show I ever saw in that venue, and it was really fun. It was my first time seeing you guys. I was just completely blown away. And I don't know. I really respect how long you've been doing the band. Also, just as someone that like plays in bands, like not everybody can do that, you know, stick with the same project for so long. And, you know, I'm not surprised to hear you saying that you went through this really hard experience and what you wanted to do was go on tour, like, because that's the sense that I've always gotten from you playing music. I feel like it's very genuine. You're doing something because you love it, and also like because it's just like what's inside you and what you need to like just put out there. And I loved that cover of Punk Rocker that you guys did. I thought it was like so amazing, and like the video I actually thought was so sick. And I know you put it out a while ago, but I actually have not stopped thinking about the video since I saw it. And like, I'm just wondering if you could talk to me like a little bit about it, like what was behind, like what was the video, like what did it mean for you?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you like it. Thanks, I appreciate that. Yeah, that song, you know, I've always loved that song. I found it in high school. Like, it's a pretty old, it's like mid-2000s, like, song. I only knew the Iggy Pop, Iggy Pop covered or played it with Teddy Bears. It existed before that, but I always loved the Iggy Pop version. And I'm a huge fan of Iggy Pop. It's probably obvious. But yeah, I always loved that song. Again, like, it was COVID was like full swing, right? So options were limited. We didn't have a drummer, and I was just really going back to old music I liked, and like I was really vibing on that song, and I'm like, yo, we should cover this, like, whatever. I'm like, oh, we don't have a drummer right now. I'm like, well, Jeff, you play drums, like, whatever, you can play drums, like, kind of, like, he actually was, he came from drummer originally, right, but he didn't play drums for years. But I'm like, I think, let's do our thing to this song, you know, like, let's like tap into how we feel right now, you know. And like, it just came out dark and like stripped down, you know, and kind of the opposite of the original version is very like upbeat and like electronic, but that's not really how we were feeling at the time or how I was feeling. And I felt like, I always feel like with covers, cause we've done like quite a few covers, a lot of covers actually, but I only want to do a cover that, like, I only am interested in doing a cover when I'm like really feel like super attached to the song, and I have this feeling that I can add to the legacy. Like, I don't want to just cover a song. Any cover that we've done, I add my own lyrics to, because I just feel like I want to do something that will like hopefully make the author of the song proud. In this case, that actually happened, which I was blown loose by. Iggy Pop actually, he emailed us. He emailed me about the song. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I didn't put it on the internet. Well, he shouted us out on his radio show and on the BBC, and that I posted, but like, I didn't really talk about his email on the internet because I was like, I don't want to sound like I'm like showing off or something like that. But him emailing us was insane. And like him just, you know, telling us how much he liked the song. He actually said he liked it better than his, right? And like, again, like I said before, like, that is the most valuable thing I think you could really ask for is something like that. And it was just like tapping into how we felt at the moment, you know. The video was kind of like inspired by another scenario that happened in my life, like a bunch of years ago. Like, I got jumped and I got like really messed up and was in the hospital for a minute, and it was serious, but you know, I walked out and I fully recovered. And the video was kind of sort of like, I didn't get jumped by people in a weird like monster masks, but like the video was kind of like touching on a little bit of that. And also just kind of like more so than that, like, I think more overtly, like, we were trying to like tell a story of a triumph and like overcoming adversity, whether it be like, you know, depression, anxiety, or physical abuse, you know, like that was the point of the video. And, you know, like, again, just to tap into that, like, emotional rawness that I felt like the song musically was doing.
Yeah, it's so good. And there's a lot of Jersey City in the video. Yeah.
Yeah. We filmed the whole thing over there. Yeah.
Yeah. I just feel like I love how Jersey City and Crazy in the Brains are like, you know, inextricable, you know, and like, it's not, you know, at least when I started playing music, it wasn't an awesome town for music. You know, it was like, we used to go play this place, Uncle Joe's. Did you know Uncle Joe's?
Well, Wait, not the great. It wasn't a graveyard.
No, it was like a bar.
Yeah, no.
It was like a bar. It was like a bar that would let people do shows. There was like literally, there was just not really places to play. And then you guys did Funhouse, which was really exciting. It was exciting to have like a good play of good, nice venue to go play in Jersey City. Now I guess there's that, what is it, White Eagle Hall?
That's really the only place. And you know, nothing against that place, because they've given us great opportunities to open for bigger bands there. It's great. But you know, for like young kids, it's inaccessible, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's not really, to me, like that place serves its purpose and it's great, but like, you know, punk rock is for kids, you know? And like, we tried with Funhouse to have as often as we possibly could, all ages shows. And we even had like kids, high school kids play the venue, you know? Like, I mean, was it the safest place on like on earth? No, it wasn't. Like, it wasn't, and it couldn't have been. You just kind of, it was more like, it was more similar.
Because describe it. It was in like kind of, it was like not in the, you know, Jersey City parts of it are really, really nice, but it wasn't in like the really, really nice part. Like just talk about, the venue was so cool. Like maybe just, I don't know if listeners had a chance to like ever check it out.
Yeah. I feel like we should do like a mini documentary on it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so short lived, right? It was only 2 years, but you know, 2 years that were pretty eventful. It was in like not the greatest area. I wouldn't call it like the straight up hood, but it was right under the Turnpike Bridge, which brought you into Jersey City. That was one way to get into Jersey City. We lived on the corner at the time, and we were like, yo, let's start a venue. Like we're thinking of like Gilman Street and like, you know, like the Discord House and like shit like that we grew up like inspired by. I'm like, yo, we should start a venue because we're from Jersey City, but there's really nowhere to play over here. Like people would always confuse us and think that we're from Brooklyn or New York, and we're like, no, we're actually not, you know. But that's mainly where we played shows. Whatever, we just so happened to realize we live around the corner from this like weird place that like was like we undefinable at the time. We're like, what is this place? Like it's like, is it like a car dealership or something, like a junkyard? Like it was a big garage door that would sometimes be like kind of half open, and then we'd see bikers all hanging out. One time I had this car at the time, and I parked it on the corner, and I got out with my guitar, and this big huge dude, his name is Bruce, he ended up being like a mentor to us, and like our bodyguard. But at the time he didn't know me, and he was like, yo, you can't park here, you got to move that car. And I was like, oh yeah. And he's, and I'm like, oh, but it's a spot. And he's like, nah, it's our spot. And I was like, oh, all right. He was huge, I'm not gonna mess with this guy. He's like, yo, you got a guitar? That's a guitar. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you in a band? And I'm like, yeah, I am. And he's like, oh, that's cool. And then that was the end of it. But then we walked by that place every day for like forever. And then eventually like he invited us into the place for a beer, and we realized it had a bar and it had like kind of like a thing that could almost be a stage. And it was all bikers hanging out. And yeah, they were a gang. They were a biker gang. And we got to talking, and we told them about our idea, and they're like, well, let's do it here. So we started doing shows. It was completely illegal, you know, to keep it 100. Like it was absolutely illegal in many ways. Like, but it was like the most straightforward way for us to throw on shows and do it on our own terms. And we weren't following any, you know, of those rules and that you have to follow when you open a real place. You know, there was no liquor license. There was no, you needed a cabaret license or something like that. Like. But we got to throw our own shows, and we picked the bands, and we got to pay, you know, bands. We made enough money to pay bands what we thought, you know, was what they deserved, right? Because you don't always get paid like that when you play, you know, some like sketchy shows in Brooklyn or whatever. And yeah, we did our thing for like 2 years, but you know, eventually, you know, it caught up to us. The cops got involved, and they shut us down. And they That place now is like an auto body shop or something. They kicked the bikers out.
Oh, that sucks. It was really fun. It was fun place to play.
It was fun while it lasted. And, you know, we knew going into it, like, this is going to have a lifespan, you know, like, because the bigger it got, I mean, we almost had Andrew WK play there, which would have been cool, right? But there were so many, roadblocks in the way, because we wanted to keep running it, you know, sticking to these DIY ethics, and in doing that, like, it kind of set these limitations. We couldn't pay him what he needed, because we were such a small operation. So, like, the biggest show that we did there probably was when we opened for Negative Approach. And that was like, we were way over capacity, you know? So, like, it was cool while it lasted. And yeah, it might make like a cool, like, mini documentary or something at some point.
The fact that you kept it going for 2 years is actually pretty impressive now that you're describing like all the details. And it was fun to play. I remember when we got off stage, I don't know if it was Bruce, but like some big door guy bouncer, I remember, like, made a point of telling us how much he liked our set. And it was like so surprising to me and sweet. And like, it was a really nice experience playing there.
These dudes like really like shattered any kind of stereotype that you may have had about like bikers, you know, like they were super supportive of like literally every band that came through. Like, they were into it, you know. But yeah, it was a unique place, honestly. Like, I feel like it's the kind of scenario that probably only could have happened in New Jersey. It's a very Jersey like atmosphere.
Yeah
Rest in peace, Funhouse.
Em, did you have questions?
I don't know if you kind of like got into this, but you mentioned how you switched from doing more abstract lyrics to more like, this is what's actually going on. So what did you find helped like you really tap into your emotions and feel comfortable doing that?
Honestly, just time, like just doing it more, you know. When I first started the band, it was my first attempt at being a singer or writing my own songs. You know, I had been in bands, but I was a bass player. I was happy with just being on the side, like, and just doing my thing on the side. I was not in the spotlight. So yeah, the first songs I wrote in the first few albums, you know, looking back, it's like, yeah, I was a little more self-conscious, I think. So my way to, but I was still really stoked to be doing what I was doing, and I loved performing. So my way to do it was to find abstract ways to get my feelings out, or to tell stories that kind of like danced around, you know, experiences in my life. And the more I did it, the more comfortable I got. And I was like, oh, I kind of just want to like straight up tell this story instead of trying to find unique and clever ways to tell the story, you know. But I still have a lot of respect for those type of artists too, you know, because that's fun. I mean, that to me, like, those type of songs and that type of poetry is like really fun, and it like kind of puts your mind like to work, right, when it's not so easy to. And I something I really like about music in general is like, I like the fact that a song is pretty much open to interpretation. Like, you listen to a song and it may mean something completely different to you than it does to me, but like, I feel like that's something that's really cool about writing songs, is like, you write one, right, and then you give it away. It's whatever it means to you is one thing, but it can mean something completely different to, I know with pizza, right, John, I think you thought I was talking about getting hit by a car in that song. And I was like, oh, I didn't get hit by a car, but.
I definitely did think it was about you got hit, getting hit by a car. Let me look at the lyrics right now.
But that's cool, right? Like, I didn't. I mean, thank God. But like, it's cool that you thought that.
Let's see. Are the lyrics online? Let's see here. At any rate, and did you have any other questions? Because I got a couple more for Chris, and then we'll wrap it up. But if you have the question, go ahead and ask him, man.
You go for it.
Okay. Well, first of all, Chris, let's see, lyrics are not online. I ask a lot of artists this, and they always hate the question, but I love asking it. When I see Crazy in the Brains, people seem genuinely moved and affected, and they think you guys are great. Why does Crazy in the Brains have such a connection with the fans? You know, where I've seen many, I'm not going to name names. I've gone to other shows where people are like, oh, you know, like this band's coming to town. It's going to be great. And everyone's like, oh, I can't wait to see them. And they go and they clap and they leave. And they were so great, man. But they just stood there the whole time. While when you see people watching Crazy in the Brains, they are connected. What's the cause of the connection?
I mean, it's hard to answer that without like sounding like you're just giving yourself a compliment, right?
But
like,
I know, that's why I asked it.
But I think honestly, like, I mean, the bands and artists that I love are the ones that like let me know very clearly that they're having a good time, and they, or even if they're not having a good time, maybe they're having a terrible time, but like they mean it, right? Like they're authentically doing the thing. And I think that's something that's always been important to me, but also came really naturally to me. Like I'm always having a good time when I'm performing, even if I'm in a shit place mentally, that's my moment to put it all out there and really like expose every emotion that I had all day, all week, all month. And I think putting everything into it is something that is very obvious to the audience. Like you either, it's like when someone goes up there and just kind of like is just like, yo, where's my paycheck or where's my free drink or whatever, like it's obvious. And I think that doesn't, if I had to guess, I think as a fan, for me, like that doesn't resonate with me. If I had to guess, that's probably what's going on with the crowd with us. I think they see, oh, this kid means it, you know? I think, I don't know. I mean, again, that sounds like I'm just complimenting myself, but you made me answer the questions.
Woke up in the ER. There were doctors all around me. Bleeding on the brain in the street is where she found me. They done told me others hit just like me won't walk out of here. So I guess I assume because you were delivering pizzas, I assumed you were in your car and you got hit. You
see? Yeah, yeah.
So, no, anyways.
It's a fair interpretation.
Second to last question, the flip side of the previous question is there are some people that just hate Crazy in the Brains. They see a band that isn't, you know, we're four guys and we drink and we're going to get through the night, or let's fight the system. Let's fight the system. So what are you going to do to fight the system? We're going to sing about fighting the system. You know, Crazy in the Brains is so much more than that. And I love when people hate Crazy in the Brains. I wish that everyone loved them because I think you're an amazing band. But I love it because it makes me feel superior because I'm like, I get it. And they don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you feel when people hate Crazy in the Brains? You know, I read about you guys getting – I actually have never seen you guys heckled, but I read an article about you guys getting heckled once. You know, how do you feel when people hate you? Do you enjoy it? Or do you dislike it?
I don't dislike it. I don't enjoy it, but I don't care. I honestly don't care. I it's like, I understand, you know, why people are hung up on a certain idea of what punk should be, should look like, should sound like. I understand that that's always been the case, you know, like from before I was in the game, and I'm sure it's always going to be that way. I don't know why, you know, why, but I understand that that's the reality. So yeah, I mean, from day one, the fact that we chose to, you know, interpret punk music with the xylophone, people immediately were like, nah, fuck this. What is this? You know, I getting heckled. Like, I think the last time we got heckled was probably when we opened for Mischief Brew. Rest in peace to Eric.
Where'd you guys open for Mischief Brew? Was that New York or something?
That was probably it was in Brooklyn. And
wow.
Probably one of his last shows, if not his last show. So not to take it on a side note, but like we were so stoked to be on that show because we were big fans of Mr. Brew. And he was super supportive. He like gave me a hug before the set and he was like, yo, fuck all this. You guys are awesome. Like I wanted you on this show, like blah, blah, blah. We were walking up to play and like kids are shouting stuff at us. Like they see Jeff setting up his xylophone and they're like, you know, fuck this, whatever. They were calling us names and shit. But then we started playing and everyone did a 360, you know? And it's like, I think, especially in the punk scene, but in life in general, I think people jump too quickly to judge something before they give it a chance, or they're a little too rigid about, you know, just kind of fucking with what they already know or what they already heard of. But that was literally the whole point of this band from day one, has always been and still is to push the boundaries, you know, and dig deeper, because I never wanted to just repeat what had already been done, you know, and just cop. There's a lot of like copycat bands in every genre, and I just like don't think I would even be good at that, you know, like I don't really think I could do anything else than what I can't. If you don't like it, like, I'm sorry, I can't do it any differently, you know, like this is the only way I can do this, right? Like I can't fake it. I can't you know, just try and mimic what's popular or whatever. Like, so if you don't like it, that's fine. It doesn't bother me. It's music at the end of the day, you know, like it's opinion. It's all opinion based. So, but I appreciate everyone who loves it, like you.
Well, there you have it, Chris, with a great closing words. He can't fake it, and it's what he is. Crazy in the Brains are playing Crossroads with Susie Moon on September 22nd in Garwood, New Jersey. So you all should definitely go to that if you're in the area. I might be.
Oh, that's like so close to me. I'm going to that show.
So anyways, that'll be a cool show. Crazy Brain to have a brand new single out today if you're listening to this today, or it's already out if you're listening to it later. It is called Open Eyes. It's great. Crazy the Brains are awesome. Let's play Punk Rocker, and let's play what was the other track we were going to play? We were going to play give me one second here. East Side. Punk Rock on East Side. We'll be back and we're going to hit some news. We'll blast through some stories and we'll be right back. So this is East Side and Punk Rocker.
It's so- driving down the street. I'm bored with looking good. I got both hands on the wheel. The cops are coming. I'm listening to the music with no fear. You can hear it too if you're sincere. 'Cause I'm a punk rock, yes I am. I'm a punk rock, yes I am.
Back and let's hit the news. And here's a big story that's important to me, and no one agreed with me at all, and I literally do not understand why no one agreed with me at all. Cro-Mags with Harley Flanagan played Rebellion Fest this past weekend. While they were there, they were walking around the merch stand, and they saw some guy had bootleg Cro-Mags merchandise. So right there and then, Harley and the boys took the merch from the guy's table and walked away and left him without his bootleg material. The listeners probably know that bootleg merchandise is way up over the past 10 years. There's two main reasons why bootleg merchandise are up, in my opinion. Number one is technology, through things like Redbubble and so forth, have made it very, very easy to make bootleg merchandise. Anybody can bootleg merchandise now. You don't even need your own machine, although that does help. The other thing is music sales are down, including bootleg physical records. So because bootleg physical records are down, the bootleg type people are now bootlegging merchandise such as shirts and so forth. So bootleg items are way up. They're even more up in Western Europe, and they're way, way, way up in Western Europe and Asia. But traditionally, those are where the most bootlegs come from in general. That being said, bootlegs are up all over. And bands aren't making money off physical music anymore, so it's important for them to be able to make money. Merch and shows are the primary areas where any medium-sized band makes their money from. It's their bread and their butter, and it's necessary to keep the band going. And so I post this article, and everyone's like, hooray! How, you know, it's great to bootleg the Cro-Mags. It's great to bootleg. One guy even says, bootlegging is punk rock. And I'm like, how? Bootlegging active bands, punk rock. Like, to me, punk rock is creating interesting art and also maybe creating some sort of social change or cultural change or something like that. Stealing from the bands that don't make that much money defeats that entirely. I really don't understand how bootlegging is punk rock at all. If you want to steal, steal from Amazon, you know, steal from, I don't know, a bank, steal from 7-Eleven. Don't steal from the bands that are like trying to earn a living and make interesting art and do cool things. But the vast majority of the commenters were very pro bootlegging. And I was astounded, frankly. I just think bootlegging is one of the biggest plagues on music. And the fact of the matter is people often say, oh, it's just some kid. A big part of my day job is tracking down and beating the crap out of bootleggers. Howdy Bullet, out of 50 times of beating up bootleggers, how many do you think are just some kid? And how many are some guy that actually has his own bootlegging operation and has realized that bootlegging will make him money with little to no overhead because he doesn't actually have to pay to license the material? What's the ratio? Kid to guy that has tactically decided to bootleg because it makes him money.
I feel like the guys that I see doing that, they're like older. They're definitely not kids. Like the people that I see selling that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I'm going to say 46 out of 50 are like guys who are trying to make it their job, not just some kid that's like doing it on a lark.
49 out of 50. So it's almost always just some creep that decides, oh, I don't care about stealing from band. And it'd be one thing if they were bootlegging like the Screamers or like the Nuns, bands that aren't active anymore, they don't sell merch. But it's more often than not active bands because those are the shirts that people want to buy, generally speaking. And so I just think it's a real plague. But what also astounds me, both at Punk Rock Bowling and at Rebellion Fest, there are bootleggers selling bands that are playing the festival. When the Damn played Punk Rock Bowling last time, there was bootleggers selling the Damn shirts right down from the Damned official shop, which blew my mind. I was really surprised. I was really surprised that the guys that run Punk Rock Bowling, like they know they got bootleggers coming. They know who's selling this stuff. But you think they'd like kind of on the DL say, all right, you know, sell what you want to sell, but don't sell any of the bands there. But I guess they just don't care. So that being said, it's a real problem. And kudos to Harley and the boys for really scaring somebody. And I wish more bands would be this proactive. Because what are they going to do to you? There's nothing they can do to you. So if you're in a band and you see somebody bootlegging your stuff, take it and don't take any BS. That's what I say. Howdy Bullet, agree or disagree?
You know, I agree. I mean, I did think, you know, like, I think it's, I think that bands need to stand up for themselves and their ability to just make anything for all the blood, sweat, and tears that they put into making music and playing shows and being on the road. And I was a little surprised that they posted about it only because I'm with you, John, totally. But I knew that the comments were going to be, this isn't punk. Cause like, right, people that don't play music, they think that what's punk is to just do it because you love it and you don't care if you make any money at it. And that is by and large true. Very few people playing punk are like pulling in money hand over fist. Like you are doing it because you love it. You're asking, by asking people not to bootleg your crap, you're just asking to just basically be able to survive. But I knew that punk fans wouldn't see it that way. And so I was surprised that they posted about it. It's one thing to confiscate the stuff, you know, but it's something else to publicly say, like, we did this because we think it's wrong. And I actually think it's kind of cool that they owned it. You know, they were like, this is our stance about it. Unapologetically, we just don't think this should be happening. I thought it was kind of cool.
I just love whenever Harley's a badass, like, because Harley actually isn't that big. He's very muscular, but he's much smaller than you. Like, he's only like 5'6", you know. So I love when Harley's a bad, like, yeah, we took it from the guy, and he didn't say shit to us because, well, we would beat him up, which I think is rad. And more rad or sad?
Very rad. Bootlegging is not punk. You want the music, you have to make sure the people make a living and are able to do it. So support them in any way you can. What are they going to do with the merch that they confiscated? Like, are they going to sell it and then take the money, or are they just going to destroy it?
Great question. And here is a lot of my clients have had this problem is 8 out of 10 times or even 9 out of 10 times, the merchandise itself is of really shitty quality. Either the printing is bad or the shirt is bad, or it's just not a good product, or it looks ugly. This Cro-Mag stuff looks really ugly. So if you sell it, then, you know, people buy it and they're buying a shitty product, which is never good. So then you say, well, then I'll sell it at half price or a quarter price. The problem there is it cannibalizes your good merchandise. And so you sell a shitty shirt for $4 instead of a good one for $20, where you would have made $10, but now you're only making $4 and you're not, you know. So generally speaking, unless the clothes are of good quality, then I recommend that my clients destroy it. One option is if you mail order, sometimes throw that stuff in. But even then, I don't like that because people don't necessarily understand what it is that they're getting. So they're like, oh, I got this shirt, but they wear it and it's shitty. And they remember that it's a shitty shirt from, quote, the Cro-Mags, even though it's not really from the Cro-Mags, you know. Right. So it's a tough choice. You know, I guess you could throw out into the crowd or whatever, but I mean, like, do you want people wearing ugly shirts with your logo on it? Probably not, right? You know. Chris, have you ever tracked down a bootlegger and beat the shit out of him?
No, but you know, I love that. That's the most Cro-Mags moment of all time. He finds a bootleg merch table and he goes ape shit. I love it. Yeah. There's a lot of fake stuff going around. Like you'll see, like, Forever 21 or stores like that, they'll sell like some weird version of a punk shirt, like a DK, but it's like kind of messed with, or like Bad Brains logos. And there's a lot of people, there's not a lot of original ideas going on anymore. And everyone's just kind of ripping off, you know, the past and trying to repurpose it. So like, I think that's lame. And, I'm glad he made them pay for it.
Here's a story that a lot of people are on the fence about. The Interrupters have released their fourth album. The fourth album is called In the Wild, and one of the lead tracks is called Raised by Wolves, and it has the video. The reason that this Interrupters album is significant is because the first three Interrupters albums were very heavily affected by Tim Armstrong. He produced them, he wrote or co-wrote most of the tracks, and he actually played on a lot of the tracks. The new Interrupters album is not produced by Tim Armstrong. It is produced by Kevin Bavona of the Interrupters. And Tim is on about four of the tracks, and he's not on, he has something to do with about four of the tracks. He sings on one, and I think he did some writing on some others, but it really is not as much of a Tim Armstrong Interrupters collaboration, just Interrupters work. And if you listen to it, the album, like the last, all the first three albums are pretty much ska albums or Hellcat style ska, where the new one's got it's got a couple reggae tracks, it's got a soul track, it's got a rock track, it's got a pop track and some ska tracks. So it's a much broader release. The video for Raised by Wolves and the song for Raised by Wolves, I think, is exemplifies this. And I got to say, I'm definitely on the fence. When the Interrupters, people forget, when the Interrupters were first came around, like, everyone hated them, but then everyone liked them. And now it seems like people are on the fence about them. I think this track is kind of Mickey Mouse-ish. It's kind of overproduced. I don't love it. I think the songwriting itself could be stronger and tighter. And I think, like, if you watch the video, there's a very high level of like emoting, not emotion, emoting. And so I think it is kind of calculated to be a big pop hit, which isn't the worst thing in the world. I just think to be a big pop hit, you got to have the hooks. And I don't quite hear the hooks. I do think it's probably time for Interrupters to grow, because honestly, the last Interrupters album, I mean, I was kind of not, I'm like, oh, the Interrupters is kind of a, you know, put together band, which they are. But you know what? The singer, Amy, she's a great singer. She's a great singer. She's probably one of the best singers on Hellcat. And the last album was like a fantastic, really tightly written ska album, but they've done it. So it's time to grow and move on. I just feel that they tried to maybe do a London Calling or an Exile on Main Street, but the album just kind of came up as here's a bunch of sort of different songs. And more. What did you think of the video? What did you think of the song? What's your stance on Interrupters in 2022?
I don't really like the Interrupters. I've never really been a fan of them. There's just something that doesn't click with me with it. So like, I tried to go into the video with like an open mind, because it's like, oh, it might be something cool, because I like a couple of their songs. I hated the video. so much. The forest is pretty. I like the forest. The forest is the good thing. But there's like weird camera angles that don't fit with the song or fit with the what's being shown. So just there's such a disconnect there. The song itself, like it's catchy enough. The lyrics, like there's a good story there. There's a good idea there. It just needs a little more like editing with the lyrics, but the woos that I guess are supposed to be like wolf howls kind of made me laugh because it was just like, oh, that's fun, I like that, but it didn't really fit because it was like the song's kind of serious and then this is it. I don't know. Anyways, it wasn't my favorite, but it's a Chris, step.
Chris, what'd you think of the track?
I like it. I like the band. I'm a fan of the band. So like, I think, but you know, like we were saying earlier, like music is opinion, right? But like, I feel like they're filling that space that maybe No Doubt took hold of years back. And like, yeah, it's like, it's the kind of ska that I like. Like there's so many different, you know, avenues to go down when you're tackling ska, and I'm a fan of their approach to it. I think this album, you know, is kind of elevated, right? It's they keep moving like more and more into the pop world, but I'd rather hear them on the radio, you know, than some other like corny pop shit that I'm not too into, you know. So yeah, I'm definitely a fan of it.
But it like it is pop, it really is poppy. Yeah. And then like the lyrics are trying to be like kind of hard, right? Like I think that's where it kind of lost me, because it's such a straightforward pop song, and then like, but it's trying to convince you that it's so tough, and I just wasn't buying it. So I guess that was the problem for me. It was just, there was no buy-in. You know, I was like, and I just went, and Sean, like you made me laugh when you said that they were emoting, because it was like, they get to the end, right? And she sees the wolf and it's like, she crying. Is she crying? She sees the wolf. I literally burst out laughing. It's like, I want to like it. Like I write about things that mean something to you, make a video, cry in your video. But like, it just, again, it's because there wasn't buy-in for me that moment, instead of like being really moving for me. Like I just burst out laughing, which I felt bad about, but I don't know. I like the band. I keep waiting for them. Like, I just seem like talented people. I keep waiting for them to like write the song or, you know, do the thing that I'm going to be really excited about, and I haven't ruled that out, you know. I feel like I could do something I love.
Would you agree that with her somewhat unique singing style, the power of her voice and the way she sings, she's a really great singer? Would you agree?
She's a great singer, but again, it's like, yeah, really, really pop. It's really, really pop music, but she's trying to do all, she's doing, yeah, a lot of sort of kind of tougher affectations, which to me just, it's, there's an incongruence there that I can't quite get on board.
Incongruence.
With. Yes.
Great word, incongruence. Affectation is one of my favorite words. But listen, speaking of tough, here's the toughest concert ever. The Misfits, the original Misfits, Danzig, Jerry Only, Dave Lombardo, and AC Slade, and who am I missing? Was that everybody? Oh, Doyle, with Alice Cooper and the Distillers opening. We don't have to talk a whole lot about this. It's rad. I might file for it, but I'm thinking, well, I can see the Misfits and Alice Cooper. Is seeing them together extra special or less special and more? Toughest concert ever, or too much too soon?
I would go to this in a heartbeat. This would be so fun. It would be like, there'd be so much going on. Like you wouldn't have a chance to really like, there'd just be so much. And it's a Halloween show, so you know, like Alice Cooper's coming out like swinging with all like everything. Misfits are going to be totally on their game. Distillers are going to like kick ass. I think it's interesting how Alice Cooper's opening for the Misfits. Yeah,
That is interesting. Alice has two types of. Yeah. He usually plays theaters for 2,000, or he'll play an outdoor thing for like 15,000 people, but it's usually not full. You know what I mean? So Misfits right now can fill a 25,000. You know what I mean? I think Danzig's being real cool. Like, I think promoters would really prefer him to have the group du jour open, but he's had the Damned open, the Cro-Mags, Murphy's Law, and now Alice Cooper. I think Danzig's being cool as hell. Hallie Bullitt, Danzig being cool as hell, or just catering to the almighty dollar?
I don't know. I feel like you need to tell me that. I this was the first time I was hearing about this thing where they like were court ordered to play shows. I didn't know anything about that.
Let me clear that up right now. There's a lot of misinformation about that issue out there right now. Here's what we know. I feel like not TMZ. What's the show? A court cam. Here's what we know. So Danzig and Jerry Only sued each other in the 90s and they settled. Then they sued each other again because Danzig felt that Jerry Only was not giving Danzig the appropriate cut of profits from Misfits shirts, which Jerry Only had been licensed to in the prior lawsuit. They go to a mediation. Whenever you sue each other, you usually have to go to mediation where a mediator tries to work it out. Most things don't settle at the mediation, but sometimes they do, especially if you have a good mediator. In that mediation, Jerry Only and Glenn Danzig agreed to be friends, and that they would do 10 quote, or actually we don't know how many original Misfit shows, but do original Misfit shows and make a whole bunch of money. A settlement document leaked, which I don't even think is real. Everyone thinks is real because like, I can't imagine, like, that's a pretty high stakes settlement. As we can see, they're each making at least $1 million a show. So it's a pretty high stakes settlement. So I think the thing that leaked is either draft or not real at all. People think that it's real. At any rate, there was some kind of settlement between the two where they would do X number of shows. There is no court order. There is a settlement agreement where they agreed to do maybe 10 shows, maybe more. So it's not a court order. It's a settlement where they agreed to work together and make a bunch of money. And it's been working extremely well.
Got it. Yeah, I don't know. This seems cool. I mean, I think like you guys, I was like a little surprised. I think it's just because I'm a child of the 80s and I think of Alice Cooper as being this like huge act. I was surprised to see that he was opening, but yeah, it seems like it'll be awesome.
Chris, would you go to the show?
I that blew me away too. I figured Alice Cooper is like the bigger act. I mean, yo, it's rad. I honestly, for me, I'd love to see the Distillers on that kind of huge stage. I'd be the most excited for that. I love the Misfits, but it's kind of like weird. Like, it's over. Like, why are we? They're doing it for the money, so whatever. Cool. I think it's, you know, good for them. They're making like millions of dollars off punk rock. Like, God bless. I think I'm happy for anyone who makes money off doing this. So, cool show. I'm probably not going to go to it, but like, it's cool that it's happening.
Two quick more stories. And more, tell us about Thought Crime. And then we'll wrap this one up with a weird story. But tell us about Thought Crime. Or Thought Crime, rather. Thought. And thought. Can someone tell me? I mean, I've seen that word. I have a vague idea of what thought is. Chris, what's thought? I bet you know.
I'm actually a thought. So I'm a walking definition of one.
What is a thought?
Actually, what does it technically mean? It means that hoe over there.
Oh, yeah. Is that what it means?
Technically, yep. I'm pretty sure. Am I right about that?
Yep.
Yeah, so.
I didn't know that. How did you know? Did you know that?
I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought thought meant like hot girl. That's what I thought it meant.
Maybe it could.
That hoe over there could also be hot.
Yeah.
No one says
Edmore, she listen. Edmore, exactly. tell us about that hoe over there crime.
I want them to change their name to that. Just like spell it all out. Oh, that'd be funny. Yes. Okay. They're really cool. They are a cyber grind band, and they just signed Prosthetic Records. And they're going to be releasing an album called Digital Drift, but it's spelled with numbers and letters and underscores and all sorts of stuff because it's online. And the really cool thing is the band's made up of members from Illinois, Philadelphia, and the UK. And they keep in touch and in contact and record the majority of the stuff like through the internet and keep in touch that way. So it's really, really, really cool the way they're able to do all this. So they released a video for their first single from the album called Rejection Sensitivity Dysphoria. and the song is under 2 minutes. It is it's really, really cool. There's so many different things going on. Like there's like super heavy, like machine gun drum sounds. There's like metal elements. There's a little bit of hardcore punk elements. There's like kind of a spoken word thing, like how the singer delivers the lyrics. It's more spoken, but she also sings and screams and it's nuts. There's electronic mishmash of like electronic pop and dance music. So it's just this really cool, fresh sound where it's everything all at once. And it's really, really interesting because again, they're pulling from so much. And I've listened to the song a couple times, like I've listened to the song quite a bit. I really like the song. But every time I listen to it, I hear something different and there's another layer to it. So I'm really looking forward to hearing the full album because there's going to be like, that's just one song, right? Like everything is going to come together. And the video is really cool too. It's like 3D animated. There's a rave. There's a kind of main character who transforms into this like being with a TV screen for a head, and like there's black tentacles and kind of everything's really colorful, then everything goes black and red and the ravers kind of explode and all this kind of stuff. It's an absolutely like nuts music video. You should watch the music video because I didn't describe it properly. But yeah, they're really exciting. What do you guys think of A Thought Crime?
I thought it was like so dark and somehow also so fun, which is like, that's such a like great combination. I don't know. What did you guys think this sounded like? Cause it was kind of driving me crazy. Like I felt like it was reminded me of so many different things that I like, none of which I could quite put my finger on. Like, what is it? Who would you compare this to? Anyone.
Pupil Slicer.
No, kind of. Yeah. Oh, maybe. No, I'm sure you're right. But that's like, that's not, it was really reminding me of stuff that I like. Anyhow, I liked it. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. I feel like this is kind of the vibe that's like pushing punk forward, you know, like we're getting more experimental and we're getting kind of like digging deeper. Cause I feel like right now the bands that are like coming up are less interested in like the Ramones rip-offs and stuff like that. Like these are the kind of sounds that I think are pushing the movement forward. So I think it's rad.
Well, speaking of Ramones rip-off, here's the last story of the day. Jeff Palmer, Jeff Palmer of the Guts is going to do what multiple other bands have done. Multiple throughout the history of punk rock, there have been numerous bands that have just done track by track covers of the Ramones. Screeching Weasel did one. Beatnik Termites did one. I think MTX did one. There are about five or so, I guess, albums in the canon of Ramones track by track covers where a pop punk band has straight up covered an entire Ramones album. And the question is. Well, the question often is, what's the point? Why would you listen to a band cover the Ramones? We could listen to the Ramones. But the other hand, the other argument is, well, it's just kind of for fun. And not every release has to be, you know, a permanent, you know, canonical release. At any rate, there's a guy called Jeff Palmer of New England's The Guts, which apparently is kind of a cult band up there. I don't know a whole lot about them. But he's doing a track-by-track cover of perhaps the least celebrated Ramones-related record. He's doing a track-by-track cover of Dee Dee Ramone's Stand in the Spotlight album. That's going to be out on September 22nd, and he released one track called Emergency. I'm going to kick this off because I got a lot of thoughts on this. First of all, Dee Dee's Stand in the Spotlight album is often considered like a terrible, terrible album. It's really not that bad. And also, it's not people say it's a rap album. It is not a rap album. There's really only like three, in heavy quotes, rap tracks on that, if that's what you want to call them. But actually, there's actually some really beautiful songwriting. There's a couple of just straight up Ramones tracks, including The Crusher, which was then, quote, covered by the Ramones on the Adios Amigos album. But there's also like a very sensitive song called like Barbara Ann or Barbara or something, which is like this really moving track that sounds like it could have been written by like Dion and the Belmonts. So sadly, Debbie Harry's on it, which is cool, but sadly, she's on the songs worst track, which I think is Mashed Potato Time or something, which, you know, at any rate, so the album is actually a pretty interesting album. It definitely has issues, not great, but Dee Dee's album, I think, is way better than, like, say, a lot of the Mark Ramone solo albums or you know, even some of the Dee Dee's other solo albums, I think, is better than them. At any rate, so Jeff has done a track-by-track cover of what is considered the worst Ramones album. The question is he making fun of the album? Is he making the argument that it is actually a pretty good album? And also, or is he just being silly by covering, you know, the most hated Ramones album, if you will? But also, it does raise the point, well, what is the point? I mean, it's not like Dee Dee's solo album is listened to a whole lot. So do we need a cover of it? We haven't even really listened to the first one that much. And also, if your cover is pretty similar to it, then what is the point? And the other question is, when Dee Dee's rapping, there's a couple of lyrics that back then, they weren't meant as offensive, but in these day and age, would be offensive. So I wonder if he's going to change the lyrics when DB uses certain words that he probably should not have used, in, at least in 2022. At any rate, so, you know, the one argument is it's a funny joke, John. Why are you being so serious about it? And the other stances. Well, it's just for fun, and not every release needs to be an artist-defining release. Just for fun, records that don't last forever can be okay. But the other argument is, well, why don't you devote that time to your own thing or doing something, I guess, perhaps more fulfilling creatively? I don't know. Chris, would you do a track-by-track Ramones album cover?
No. I love the Ramones. Let me make that very clear. I really love the Ramones. And I love Dee Dee Ramone. Dee Dee Ramone is probably my favorite Ramone. Him and Joey. But no, it's corny. And again, back to something I said earlier, no one's doing anything original. We don't need cover albums. We don't need remakes of movies. Make your own album. Like, especially with the Ramones, there's so many Ramones ripoff bands. Like, I won't, like, throw names out there, but it's like, it's whack. Let the Ramones be who they are. I'm not into it. To be completely honest, I don't know who this person is. So maybe their band is cool, or maybe they're cool, but I just, the idea of a Ramones cover album, I'm not that into it, but I'll listen to it. Maybe it's really good, but I don't like the idea of it.
And more, do you like the idea of covering Dee Dee's often denigrated album, standing in the spotlight?
It's really weird. I listened to the track and he's like, hey, this is Dee Dee. And it's like, no, it's not.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, right? Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I probably won't check this out. Again, yeah, like, is it he wants people to listen to the album more? So it's like, this is one of my favorite albums and I'm going to do this. But it does kind of seem like he's doing it as a joke.
A troll.
Yeah. And just a quick, anytime I see, like, Jeff written that way, I really think it's G-off. So, like, it was just... Now I'm kind of wondering if I've ever met anyone named Geoff, or I just horribly mangled their name. So that's just another thing. Hallie, what do you think of this?
Well, I'm on this album.
Wait, what?
I'm on this album. I sing on what? German Kid with Kevin Aper. Jeff is a super prolific guy. He puts out a ton of music. So I think this for him, you know, John, you were saying, like, why not put your efforts into, like, doing something original? And the truth, he does. He puts out a ton of, he's just a really prolific guy. I think this is just, like, a fun thing for him. I think he thinks some of the songs are great, and I think he thinks some of them are terrible. And I think he, I mean, the fun thing about people doing covers is that it maybe just gets you to re-listen to something that you haven't visited in a long time. Just sort of just gets you to think about it again. When I listened to Emergency, I was like, oh, this is, like, better than I remember anything on this album being. So it did, you know, serve that purpose. I will say, having sang on German Kid, that is a terrible song. Terrible, but it was, like, sort of fun to cover something that's just terrible. There was some joy in it for me. So, yeah, those are my thoughts.
What a twist ending to the podcast. We can't top that. Chris, thanks for being on the show. Anything you want the listeners to know or to check out, or any other of Hallie's projects do you want to diss while we're here?
Yo, dude, you set me up. That was not cool.
I had no idea. I should have read the credits more closely. I honestly had no idea.
I'm gonna listen to your song. I'm sure your song is the best one.
I guarantee it's the worst one, but that's sort of the beauty of it, right? It's just like, you're really, it just, you know, it does like it. I don't know that anybody needs this album, and I don't think that Jeff thinks that anyone needs it, but it did, you know, I'm listening to it and I'm like, it just makes you think like, wow, he really did this. Dee Dee really was like, yeah, I'm going to write this rap song about like my childhood. Yeah. And it's real. It's just really, really wild.
He went for it.
Well, there you have it. Everyone has to follow their own muse. Anyway, Chris, thanks for being on the show. Crazy in the Brains have a brand new single out. It's called Open Eyes. We played at the beginning of the show. They're playing Garwood, New Jersey on September 22nd. And let's close this on out with the song that I terribly misinterpreted, which I've been doing a lot lately. This is Crazy in the Brains doing I Don't Deliver Pizzas Anymore.
Y'all just can't get rid of me. I'm fulfilling my